Hello and welcome back to the Parallax Perspectives podcast. In this episode, we're joined by Magda Kay, who is an intimacy expert. She's a certified tantra teacher, a relationship coach, and is on a mission to help individuals around the world experience more love, more pleasure, and more intimacy. She's also the founder of the School of Intimacy, which you can find online, and she's the author of No More Faking It, which is getting really great feedback and reviews. Her books are available on Amazon and online. She is someone that I met back in Bali a few years ago, and I love the way that we met, really attracted in our alignment of thinking and emotional intimacy, how it is that we create ourselves and build our life through this approach. I've been on the fly on the wall for many of the conversations that she's had around sexuality, and it goes beyond my comfort level. So it's such a pleasure to have her on the podcast, sharing so much of her wisdom and her insights. So if you love what she's sharing, please follow along, enjoy this episode, and as usual, I'd love to hear your feedback. Please like, subscribe, support the podcast as we continue to turn up the quality of the guests and the conversations that we're embarking on. We could have this conversation for hours, but I really want to dial it in to the value in I know which you have to serve. I guess as a permission, maybe for the audience, but also for yourself, I know this is going to be no problem for you. You have so much depth and wisdom in what it is that you can share on sexuality and intimacy and tantra, and a lot of these conversations are really uncomfortable. I know that we've had these conversations or I've been part of conversations that we've had in Bali that have really pushed my limits of comfort. I want to give you permission, and I know this is probably, you could go way further than what we can even possibly go for in this podcast, but I want to give you permission. Nothing's off limits, and also just let the audience know that nothing's off limits. We're going to dive in. Is that just cool to be able to bring what it is that you want to share and what you know is important that needs to be
added? Yes, and thank you, because yeah, I've been doing this for about a decade, so I've become like, it's a normal thing for me to talk about sex, but I forget that for some people it's very uncomfortable, and I also forget that in public spaces or in different platforms I have to be more mindful. So it's a nice permission to have that I can just be myself and talk about all of this freely and take you on this journey, I would say, into our own intimate self. So that is a great foundation to start.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Because I love the energy that you bring to it, the real that you bring to it. I think a lot of people, or what I see kind of pop up on Instagram and this conversation seems, I don't know, a lot of it seems a bit fake. And you bring this kind of real energy. I remember the very first time that we met back in like Wanderlust, and I don't know, maybe I had a preconceived idea of what you might be, and you're like, nah, I eat meat and ride motorbikes and talk about sexuality and bring femininity into the world and healthy masculinity. And I was like, seems like it's almost like it doesn't go together. But then I realized it's because this is real. This is life. And I really love how you bring that.
So I actually remember that conversation because of that. So yes, I'm telling you that I come from a tantric community and do a lot of spirituality. And then I think you and your brother, you expected that I would be vegan and following all of this mindset. And I'm like, nope. At that time, I was doing carnivore diet. And exactly, we met in a CrossFit gym. And I think I love that about myself. And I honestly think we are all like that. I think there's so many things that just don't make sense that coexist in every human being. And I think one of the most beautiful aspects is learning to hold two opposite ideas in your mind. Like, our mind is perfectly capable of doing that, but we have this tendency of always wanting to be like, this is either that or that. And like, if I'm already this, then I have to be all of that. You know, I'm either a Democrat or a Republican. I'm either vegan or carnivore. I'm like religious or atheist. It's like you have to pick sides, but that's not really how life works. And I think every person will find multiple personalities inside of them that seems to be in total opposition to each other. But I think this is what's like uniquely beautiful about us all. And then, you know, instead of assuming that you know someone because you learn one thing about them, like, you never know who the other person is, because exactly like that conversation that we had, we can keep surprising other people. We can keep surprising our partner, because there's so many like illogical aspects to our personalities and our hobbies and opinions. And I honestly find it so fascinating that we're like that.
Yeah. I love that conversation. I love that you bring that to front of awareness. It's so true. Having those contradictions, or it has to be one way or the other, I think it's because it's an easy way to obtain certainty about things, right? But when we got all the gray in the middle, that's really uncertain. It's like, well, what do we latch on to? We don't know anything.
And you know, I always say, like, nothing is white or black in life. And I always used to say, it's all the, you know, shades of gray. And now I don't get to say it because of the book. It's like they stole my saying. Oh, but yes, I honestly think that everything is a shade of gray in life. Like, hardly anything is black or white.
Yeah. So I've been wanting to ask you this question for a while, because I know we've had so many different conversations about so many different topics. A lot of them are the uncomfortable topics. A lot of the topics that I've never been brought up with discussing or having ideas around or being exposed to. I really wonder, like, in your own words, what do you consider is your real expertise and value that you serve your clients and bring to the world as a whole? Because I know you have a lot of wisdom, but what would, if you, and I know this is a kind of a challenging question, define it to one thing, and maybe it's not just one thing, but what is it that you're like most passionate or most well-versed in that you're like, this is where I really deliver value and create impact?
Absolutely. So for me, what it comes down to is the depth of connection, or in fact, really the depth of being a human, of being alive. So how deeply do you experience life? Because we have so many people in relationships, but they're superficial relationships, and people really want to go deeper. It's like so many people feel like it's just not enough. It's like something is missing, and you can feel a frustration around it because you feel you can go deeper. There can be more, but you just don't know how to move. So you feel stuck. And stuck energy actually causes frustration. So a lot of us are super frustrated because it's like, I need more. And we don't know how to get that more. So for me, it's the depth. And that means it's the depth of connecting with yourself. So what is your relationship to yourself? It's the depth and the quality of connection with other people. And that, of course, that means also our intimate romantic relationships, but all of the relationships. And the third aspect is the depth of connection with God or nature or life, whatever is like the better term for you. But are you actually intimate with life? Do you feel the magic of existence? And do you have that intimate connection with it? So for me, what I really do is I help people go deeper and have that beautiful, intimate connection with everything. That is really the essence.
Yeah, I love that. That's so great. There's so many things I want to touch on and explore and ask you about that. I know, based on previous conversations that we had and little insights about what you've done, this hasn't always been you, has it?
Like, no, around definitely
before
not.
Sex and tantra and connection and own emotional intimacy. I know that, or I've got a sense, and from what I've heard, your professional and personal life was quite different to what it is now. Who was Magda Kay before this world that you live in? And what was that transition? What did that look like?
So you could say Magda Kay 1.0. She was a business girl. I wouldn't say businesswoman, a business girl. So I went to business school, the best business school in my country. I then went on to work for like the biggest companies like Procter & Gamble. And I used to live in Italy working for Luxottica, which is a massive company. They own Ray-Ban, which I think people will know, or Oakley and Prada. So it's just like these big, big, big brands. And then I worked for Mindvalley, which again, maybe many people will know here. And so that was the past. And yes, and now I talk about relationships and sex. So no, absolutely, it wasn't something I was dreaming of doing. It's not like the career that I chose. It's more like I fell into it. But I fell into it because my own personal life pulled me in that direction. So I kind of joke, although to be fair, there was nothing funny about it at that time, that I got my midlife crisis at 25. I was living in Milan, Italy. So you'd think, oh my God, what a perfect place to live. I was working in luxury and fashion, again, amazing. But I was really deeply unhappy. And at this time, I was also diagnosed with, like, I was told I may have cancer. So it's like I was facing this massive health scare. And on top of this, my beloved grandma died. And all of these things were piling up. And I just realized, like, something needs to change in my life. And that was the beginning of a whole new journey. And I don't even know how that happened. It was really fast. I ended up moving to Southeast Asia. And that's where I got into the community of Tantra and energy healing. And this whole path started. But it was really about me having all of the suppression and shame and guilt around my sexuality. I was inorgasmic. I was terrified. I think by then, I think I had only had sex when I was drunk. So I had never had sex sober because I was so terrified of that level of vulnerability and intimacy. And, you know, my body was crying because I was disrespecting it. It was crying and crying and crying until I finally had to address this. So the path switched from this business girl, very driven, very ambitious, very logical. It was that I needed my healing. So I was looking for the answer for myself and going in that direction. I realized that this is really my calling. It just, it's like, you know, it feels like I'm home. That's where I am meant to be. So yeah, it was absolutely unexpected. This is not how I started my life.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you so much for sharing that. What an incredible journey to have gone on. And I think a lot of people, and I trust a lot of people, have resonated with that story because these upbringings that we have in different parts of the world, I know it's different, but like it certainly seems to shut down so many parts of us. And then we go out and look at what is socially or culturally like impressive or expected, or with capitalism and materialism. And I've visited Milan. I know what you're talking about. It's very beautiful, but it's so like business driven or fashion driven. And so what about the connection with self? The way I've noticed this come up, and I think the community that's listening here is going, when we feel disconnected from our job, it's like, oh, well, the alternative is go and build a business, or go and build a lifestyle. I think what you're sharing and what I'm hearing is go and build a relationship with ourselves first and find out and really understand what's happening within ourselves. What stood out to me was like, my body is crying. Tell me more about that.
You know, so I spent almost a decade in these conscious communities, which they're very unique because people don't really care about money and career, but they really care about relationships. So I got to really focus on that and just invite so much intimacy into my life. But now I'm back, what we call, I'm back in the matrix. I'm back in Poland, in Europe, in a big city, and everyone is rushing. And I already feel the shift in my body because I move much faster. I try to do so many things. It's like, and recently my mom had a surgery and she requires a lot of assistance because she can't do really anything on her own. So now I have this on top of everything. I need to be taking care of the house because she's sick and I'm just trying to do all of these things. And I go to bed every day when half of my to-do list wasn't done. And so everything is fast. And I feel that. I feel this tension in the body and I'm aware of this. And I'm like, okay, so how can I, you know, I do have to do these things, which is the reality for many people. We have the things we have to do, but then you can feel that the body needs something. The body needs a bit of break. And I think in the past, I didn't feel that because we're all tense and we don't realize that we're tense because that's the normal. So actually, let me give you an example for everyone. You guys, you can do this with us. So if you just extend your hands in front of you and you can place them on the table in front of you or on your lap and your palms are facing up and just relax your hands. Okay. And now if you look at your palms, I want you to look at your fingers. And are your fingers flat on your table or on your laps? And if your fingers are not flat, it means that your palms are actually tense. The muscles on the inside of your hand are so contracted that they're pulling the fingers in. And some people, when they do it, it's like when they try to relax their hands, it's like the fingers are almost in a fist because that's how much they're bent. So I love giving this example because you probably would never think that your palms are tense, that your muscles in your palms are contracted, because that's what you are in 24/7. So we don't realize things that we feel nonstop. That's why we don't feel the air. That's why the fish doesn't feel the water. So it takes the experience of the opposite to understand the difference. And so if most people keep running and rushing and are always busy, then they're never in a position to experience relaxation and experience what the body is trying to tell them. And so most people don't understand just how much tension they carry in their body. But then once you have even a glimpse of relaxation, that's when you can start working with your body a bit better and negotiate a little bit. So I, for example, try to finish work at like 5 or 6 p.m. and just give myself an easy night. I try to keep Sundays, especially, off work. I have a bit of a rule not to run to the bus or a tram and not to run to make the green light. It's like I can wait for the next green. I'm not really in a rush. Like these are the few things I can just wait for. So these little habits can help us be more in tune with the body, but it is required to stop and slow down. And so unless you first consciously design these moments where you get to slow down, you will not feel your body. And you're only going to feel your body or hear your body when it like breaks and you end up in a hospital and now you have no other choice but to, you know, take a break from work, for example, because the body first whispers. And then if you keep ignoring it, it's going to knock you down with a brick, you know, but then it's not really pleasant.
Yeah, I love this message. I really love this message, how it ties so well into the previous conversation we're having on this podcast around stepping into your ideal self. I think a lot of people have this vision of how they want to live or how they want to build their lifestyle, and you know, chasing the job, the dream job, or chasing the dream relationship or house or all these things. And what you're now tapping into is a whole nother depth of becoming the ideal version of yourself. I think before we can have it, we need to become it. And so it's more about being aware, bringing awareness and bringing intention of who it is that we want to become.
So you know what? I heard this awesome quote like really not long ago, and it really stayed with me. And it said this: it's easier to want to be better than to accept yourself as you are. And it really hit me because I looked at myself, and how much of me trying to change my life comes from the fact that I just don't want to accept myself as I am. And I think being the best version of ourselves, or like really being who I truly want to be, I think in a way it needs to be rooted in accepting myself and loving myself. So then I improve myself from the place of loving myself instead of, you know, from the place of like, I am wrong as I am, so let me change. Another friend of mine said, you cannot punish yourself to greatness. And I also love that quote. It's like, yeah, it's like, you know, we're so used to as kids that we get punished for doing something wrong. And that's how we expect our kids and other people to learn, but that's not how we learn. So if I keep punishing myself, it's not going to happen. So now back to this conversation about listening to the body and rushing. If I have a vision of who I want to be, and let's say, let's talk about intimate relationships. I have this vision of who I want to be. And I think that I am not this person now. So I'm just like rushing to get to where I want to get. Well, ignoring the fact that who I want to be exists in this present moment. And if I can actually drop a bit deeper into who I am and feel it, you may realize that maybe you don't have to change as much as you think. Because if you're not rooted in your body, you'll always think that, no, I'm far away from who I need to be, far away. And you're missing how much you can live this. So, sorry, I'm just going to speak for a bit longer here, but
Please, I love everything that you're sharing. Please go on.
So one of the areas, I won't lie, that is a challenge for me is the abundance mindset. My father went bankrupt when I was a teenager, and it really shook like my foundation and my trust in life. So I'm still working on that. So I was doing an exercise on abundance, and What we were meant to do is write down how much money you want and then what you want that money for. So it's like, you know, if you had all the money you want, how would you spend it? How would your life look like? So when I was doing this exercise, I kind of realized that I pretty much would be living my life the way I live it now. It's just, I would upgrade a lot of things. Like I would live in a nicer apartment. I would fly business and first class. I would stay in nicer hotels, but I wouldn't be doing things differently. I would still be doing the things that I'm doing. I would have the same job because I love my work. I would do the same hobbies. I would still do CrossFit and still do motocross and still do wakeboarding and all of that. So I realized that a lot of this ideal self that we want to become, a lot of it is already here. But because we're always rushing, we don't ever get to see that. And so we don't ever get to live that and be that because we nonstop think that it's always in the future. It's always ahead of me. And then you never become that. It becomes this like, you know, I don't know how you say this in English. There is a saying like in Greek mythology, there's one of the characters that has to push the rock up the hill. And then anytime he gets almost to the top, it falls down. So it's like, it's a work, it's a job that never ends and never will end. You just can never finish this. So it feels like that. You're just like, you know, on this treadmill trying to chase this ideal self, totally ignoring the fact that a lot of your ideal self is already here. You just have to stop and actually embody this.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. What's coming up for me is the contrast between trying to escape the internal self-judgment or the internal, and this is really strong language, the internal self-hatred. I think there's a lot of people that are carrying a hatred for themselves that has been suppressed and trying to run away or escape it to greener pastures. And, you know, the grass isn't greener on the other side. And so in my experience, I've seen this within myself and with the clients that I've worked with, is previously trying to run to something else as if it's going to be better and arrive there and it's still the same. Or it's not what they expected. So they keep going and keep chasing, but it's a form or a type of escapism as opposed to going, well, sit, like what I'm hearing from you is sit, be still, connect with who we are, bring the acceptance, the compassion, the love, all the parts of ourselves versus, you know, if it's the judgment of ourselves, we're literally judging ourselves and a part of ourselves. And until we can accept those parts, it's always going to be running away rather than moving towards going, it's just refine or turn up or lean into and tap into the better versions or the improved versions or the upgraded versions and then bring all parts of us along.
I love what you said about running away instead of moving forward. So we're both very nomadic. And there was a time when I realized, so I would move from one country to another. I used to have this pattern of 3.5 years and it was never intentional, it just kind of happened. But so, you know, so I moved from, you know, Italy to Malaysia. And then from Malaysia, I moved to Poland for a little bit, then to Bali and so on. And I remember in Malaysia, I was like, I'm leaving. But then I thought to myself, I want to run away. That's what I'm trying to do because I'm unhappy at work at this point. I was still working for a company. I just broke up with my partner at the time. And I'm like, wow, I'm just like, oh, because I'm so unhappy here, let me leave. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to wait. I'm going to work through whatever is happening so that when I leave Malaysia, I leave it towards something. And not to run away, because if I run away from Malaysia, the point is I'm still bringing myself with me, right? There's the saying, like, you can never run away from yourself because you bring yourself anywhere you go. So as long as I'm unhappy with myself, I'll never be able to stand still. And whether it's a physical location or a relationship or a job, anything, we will just keep running away. And it's like, imagine something is chasing you and that's how you live your life. So how can you become the best version of yourself if you're nonstop terrified of the monster behind you? So we got to tame this monster to be able to create. Because again, you're not going to just, you know, you're not going to find your best self by running away from your fears. You create your best self. And you can't create your best peace if you're in fear and in survival mode.
Mm. totally resonate with that. My pattern was 1 to 1.5 years, whether it is in locations, traveling and living abroad, whether it's in jobs, or whether it's in relationships. I had this 12 to 16 month period where it's like, okay, time to run away, time to change, time to quit. I thought it was just like seeking adventure or spontaneity, or I'd put it on all these different attributes that I thought were positive. But then I realized it was very much that escapism. It was like the discomfort within me would build up to a level where I'm like, I can't handle this anymore. So I'll change it and go somewhere else. And then it would build up. And it's like what you say, anywhere I went, there I was. What's the common denominator here in the way that I'm feeling? Oh, shit, it's me. What was it that you found, like as a contrast, what was it that you found that you needed to do then different to start overcoming that?
You know what, honestly, may sound a bit like cliche, but I just needed to stop running. So I think in the past, I was so terrified of all these like feelings and fears. And I was like, no, I cannot stay here. I'm going to die. I just have to go. So when I decided to stay in Malaysia, I literally didn't do anything. I just stayed. And these things naturally moved. Like they say that time heals. And I think this is really what it was. Like, yeah, I was doing things to like speed up the healing or just actually like move forward in the process. But it's like, simply stay. I guess you can compare it to if you're sick, and most of us are like, nope, I am not going to be sick. I am still going to work and I'm going to push through it. And then your body's like, okay. And then you're either sick for a whole month, or you get even sicker because you just push through it, or you're fine now, but then next month you're going to be sick again. But what you could just do is stay home for 1 or 2 days, like just rest, kind of pause, let your body heal, and then keep going. And honestly, that's kind of what it was. So just stop moving. And like life will take care of everything, but stop moving. And I think, yeah, this whole idea that like, I don't even really have to do anything. Like things move anyways. Like, you know, now I'm in Europe, it's winter. I can be obsessed that, oh my God, it's so cold. Or I can just be like, chill, it's going to pass anyways. Everything passes. And, you know, I feel like we kind of hate time because it passes and we just would rather that it didn't. Like outsource some things to time. Like time is there. So if you're so upset that the time passes and you never have enough time, then at least, you know what? Why don't you just take care of some of my issues? Just outsource it to time. You know, you don't have to heal and do everything. Just let time take care of some things. And I think just sometimes letting go and surrendering and be like, okay, I'm just going to wait. And suddenly, hey, spring came back and the sun came out again. And I didn't have to do so much. So I think there is certain advantage in trusting life. I'm not saying be passive. I hate that. I'm very proactive. I'm definitely someone who loves pushing and doing things. But it's nice to co-create your life with some help, you know? Yeah. So honestly, I didn't do anything. I just didn't move. And then it was okay.
Yeah. Well, I think there's an important connection here that we need to make. What I'm hearing and just to maybe help the audience and make sure they're hearing, you say time heals everything. I think what you're saying is time, but also being the co-creator in that time. And the big difference that I heard you mention there versus what a lot of people say, time heals everything, is using the time, saying the time will heal everything, and at the same time, run away. The escapism and expect the time to heal it, like as if it's behind you. Versus what you did is going, I'll stay here in Malaysia. And this is also what I did, is just staying and sitting within the discomfort was what created the change. And then the time within the discomfort of doing whatever the opposite, not even necessarily the opposite, but whatever the non-comfortable thing is, that's when it really started changing. I think it takes a lot of courage to do that. It takes awareness. Stop running, feel the discomfort, sit within that. And then within that, that's what a lot of the development actually starts changing the perspectives. And so when you turn around and you look at the scary monster and the dream, it disappears.
And it's so crazy, right? It's those things that terrify us so much. Once we stop running, and like you say, we look at it, you realize, oh, it's not that scary. I thought it was terrifying. I thought I was going to die. And then you realize it wasn't even close to that. So I'll tell you. Okay, I'm going to give you a little bit of a story. So I love scuba diving, and we're talking. Okay, so when I was younger, I used to scuba dive, and then I had, I think, like 7 years break. And then the first dive that I do after 7 years is in South Africa in winter. So the water was like about 11 or 13 degrees. And I went there for the Great White Shark Expedition. I love sharks, my favorite animals. The point is, we're going scuba diving off the shore. And it's in a kelp forest. It's super cold. So we have like these three layers of wetsuit. So extremely uncomfortable to move. Very, very cold water. We're in a kelp forest where you don't really see anything. And you're aware that there are great white sharks that are somewhere there. And you're just like really scared. And so we're doing this dive. And it was actually conditions that I had not been exposed to before. Meaning there was a swell. So it's like current is pushing you forward and then taking you back. And then pushing you forward and taking you back. Now, again, I was in a lot of discomfort. I was also losing one of my fins because like it just was too big. So I'm almost like panicking. And then I feel this current is pulling me back into an open ocean. And I'm, you know, just like so scared. I'm like, oh my God. So anytime it tries to pull me back, I try to paddle and swim forward to like save my life because I'm like, oh my God, this is such a dangerous dive. I'm using so much oxygen. And I think I'm fighting with this for like, you know, 15 minutes until I just decided, what if I just let it take me? And so now the current takes me back into the open ocean and I'm not fighting, but then it pushes me forward. And that's when I start swimming and speeding up. And I make up for whatever was the distance I was taken back. And I realized like, oh, I was fighting with something and getting exhausted. And I just needed to let it take me. Like, let it take you when it takes you back. But when it pushes you forward, that's when you use your energy and move. Like you use that momentum because now the current is supporting you in the direction you want to go. But I was fighting so much that discomfort. And it was the moment I just thought, what if I just let it take me? And that's when the dive became comfortable again. So it's a great story for me to remember that when life starts going against what you want, just let go. Like, don't fight with reality. Do what you can. But I recognize these moments when things just like, you know, nothing goes my way. I'm like, okay, something is happening. Let me just wait. You know, today I was meant to send an email, maybe like pitch myself to TV. I'm like, nope, not going to do it today because life is not really supporting me today. Let's just wait, take it easy, and I can do it tomorrow. And that kind of dance with life. So like you said, you just stay in discomfort. And then the monster turns out not to be so bad. And then next day, you move forward.
What a fantastic story. And that's such a good metaphor. I love it. One of my personal challenges, letting go. I think it's a big challenge for a lot of people, especially high achievers, the people that I work with, high achievers that have got this like relentless drive to push on, especially in business and own their life, own their future, you know, this real masculine energy of becoming the very best that they can. And within all of that comes this sense, whether it's an ego or a sense of control and want to be in charge. And life doesn't always go the way that you plan it and want it to go. And I love that story, how letting go, taking a breath, going with the flow, it doesn't mean giving up responsibility. It doesn't mean going, all right, well, I'm just going to be at the effect of everything else and I'm useless. But seeing where it is that you can go with the current, that's what my mum used to always say, just get in the turtle flow. Oh. let life take you a little bit. I'm like, and I wanted to resist it for so long. And I still haven't quite figured out the balance. I think this is kind of part of my life journey to figure that out. But your story truly resonates.
For me too. I don't think it's easy. There is, you know, there's the saying, oh my goodness. I think it's called the Serenity Prayer. And I can never properly repeat it. But there's another like version of this, which is like, you know, when the door is locked, does it mean that you have to push harder to open it? Or does it mean that it's not your door and you need to let go? And knowing the difference, it's really difficult, right? So when you come across a challenge, does it mean that you should push through it because it's a test? Or does it mean that just relax and wait? And honestly, I think this is really the biggest mystery of life. And I don't know if we can properly have the answer. Maybe what life is about is actually to keep testing that theory. Mm. Which of these two was it?
Yeah. It reminds me of what just happened to Louisa and I just last week. So we arrived back in Mexico after. So we arrived in Mexico. We got 180 day, it was 6 month visa, to come in and stay. We had planned to set up our lives there. We went on a Christmas break down to Guatemala and we came back and entering back and we're like, okay, great. So excited to be back. And we were feeling like we're coming home and going through immigration for whatever reason, out of no real reason. The lady just didn't like us, maybe. I don't know what it was, but we got a 15-day stamp. And we're like, what? It just turned our life upside down. It was at midnight. We were really like mad at this because we had everything planned out and apartment and life and everything. We're like, oh, what? Why? And so the next day we spent the next day considering, and it was that exact question. Do we fight this 15 days? So there was solutions. We could have gone back to immigration, paid some money and got an extension. We could have gone down to Belize, got on the border, come back and then got the stamp again. We could have overstayed and then just paid the fine. That was $30 or $40. You know, like there's different things. And so it was kind of like, okay, well, do we push through? And like, this is the challenge. Go and sort out our problem. Or do we just say, fuck it. We're going to get on a plane tomorrow and go somewhere else. They don't want us here. And it was a real internal challenge for me to go, am I just running away from this problem rather than taking responsibility for it? Or am I going with the flow of taking a sign? I put the sign in quotations because, you know, I think a lot of signs is like this magical thinking. You know, is this a sign that maybe we're not supposed to be here? You know, it didn't feel like the welcome we wanted. And so we kind of, Louise and I, we talked about it and we're like, okay, well, let's go and have a look at some apartments. We had apartments lined up that was going to take contract on for like 2 months. Well, if we like them, we can take them. If we don't like them, let's just go. And it turned out we didn't really like them. And we started making this decision of going, all right, let's just leave. And as we went with the flow of it and the ease of it, we realized that things started to fall into place for us. And actually it worked out really well. And that the path, I don't think we took the path because it was necessarily easier. It was a really hard decision. But it just felt like there's less resistance down that path. And so now here we are, Medellin, Colombia, so much better than Playa del Carmen, where we were. The culture's amazing. We've got this incredible apartment. I don't think it's necessarily cheaper, but the quality of life is better and just people are so much friendlier and there's so many things that we want to go and do. And now we're like, thank you for that. Well, like that bitch that didn't let us in. Thank you for that bitch. She helped us. Like, and it was hard in that moment to bring this thinking of life's happening to us. Oh, no, life's happening for us rather than to us. But that's what I keep reminding myself in those moments and then go, all right, well, let's take that flow. And it was just a reminder of going, all right, well, in those moments, go with it and try to figure it out. Do we always get the decisions right? I don't know. In the moment, it's hard to know. But it seems like every time I look back on the challenges, it's like, oh yeah, it worked out just like it was supposed to. This is awesome.
I love that. And you know, I left Bali in June and I returned to Poland and I was like, okay, I'm just going to stay here for a few months and then I will just be open to what is the next place that's calling me to be my home. And I'm like, okay, nothing is calling me. It's like, I don't like it. So the first thing I did was like, okay, I'm clearly trying to push too much. It doesn't feel good. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just give myself time until next spring. So just like, let's calm down, breathe, relax. I don't have to, you know, push for that. And then I learn about this one town in Portugal, which I'm sure I'm not pronouncing correctly. It's like Ericeira, something like that. And it looked amazing at first, but then I couldn't find an apartment that I liked. Like, it just wasn't flowing. And I was like, okay, what's happening here? Another month passed, and suddenly I'm thinking, I think I want to stay in Poland. And it wasn't an easy decision for me because I spent half of my life trying to escape this country, really. And I'm like, wow, but the truth is I actually want to stay in Poland. And I think that back in June, I definitely was not ready to receive that. Like, I'd be like, what? No, I would never move back to Poland. And so I guess the the universe gave me these months to kind of get okay with the idea that I actually want to be here for now. So something that I have learned is that in some areas of my life, and I think this can be helpful, in some areas of my life, I am comfortable trusting life. In other areas, not so much. So when it comes to living in a certain country, I'm super okay with that because I've lived in so many. I restarted my life so many times. I had to start from zero, find a house and everything so many times. In a way, it's my comfort zone. So I'm staying in Poland, but if I was to move to Berlin or London next week, I'll also be okay. Like we chatted before, I'm moving to Bulgaria for 1 month in a couple of weeks because I want to snowboard. So I'm moving there for 1 month. Easy. So I think we all have certain areas in life where we have experienced enough support from the universe to be a bit more comfortable with letting go of control. So that's where we get to practice this. That's where we get to build the muscle of trust. And then it translates into other areas of life. Because again, I told you before, I have a story around money. So it's not as available to me to just be like, yeah, sure. So money is not coming in, but I trust it's going to be fine. So, you know, like I said, with my mom being sick and needing to support her, I actually don't have as much time to do my work. And I'm just so contracted. I'm like, oh my God, but I have to. And then guess what? I just got, I was invited to teach a workshop for Entrepreneurs Organization, which is one of the top organizations for business people in the world. And I didn't do anything for that. Nothing. I didn't pitch myself at all. And then there are other things where I, like with TV, I'm trying to get to this TV program and I pitched myself like 5 times to 3 different people, no response. And I'm like, this is not happening. And I still think I have to push, but I am seeing that if I just let go and stop pushing, then life gets to give me some things. But I lean on the traveling as a reminder of how that works, because I trust with the locations simply because I've been through that so many times. And I try to borrow that trust into other areas of life where it's not as available to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I really love that. As we develop in other parts, some areas of our life, we can start seeing and transferring that across. I use that as a tool in coaching all the time. It's kind of a hard thing to explain. I think it's something that you need to experience. And, you know, if somebody's listening to this and going, okay, how do I do that specifically? If you haven't done it, I think that you need someone to help show you the way, because we haven't had the neurological pathways run or the emotional pathways run. I think it's really appropriate to have someone else on your side to go, all right, you've got the criteria or you've got the success metrics here. Let's take that and plant them over here. And now you can run with it and do it. I do think that it takes an external person to come and help you with it the first few times and then apply it in life. I've seen this happen to so many people and it's really, really effective. It's so good. I really want to, before we wrap up, I really want to touch on with the people that you work with, what are the typical like challenge themes? So I'm sure, you know, everyone that's watching or listening to this podcast, resonating the stories that you're sharing. I really love your metaphors and your stories and all the wisdom that you've been sharing. I think it's really wonderful. If there's people here kind of wanting to sort of lean more into this conversation and going, well, is this, and like, you know, maybe possibly work with you or someone like yourself, or go down this avenue of emotional intimacy or relationship with self, what are some of the typical challenge themes that you notice within, you know, the people that you start working with, and then maybe the transformational results that you see as you work with them or they dive into this work? Are you able to touch on that a little bit?
Yeah, great question. So I work with both men and women, singles and couples, and it will look a little bit differently in these different groups. I do work a lot with couples, and the main patterns I see here is after a few years, a woman is unhappy. A woman is dissatisfied. And she's more angry and annoyed with the partner than she is like affectionate and loving. And that also impacts sex. And what I see, and I see it more and more often, I think the more couples I work with, the more I see this pattern, I think the clearer it's becoming, is that deep inside, women really, really struggle to own what they want and prioritize themselves. So what women tend to do in a relationship is that they're so focused on what has to be done, all the responsibilities of being a wife, a partner, a housekeeper, a mother, and they are the last one. And so then they're unhappy because they feel drained and unsatisfied, and they project it on the partner. But unless as a woman, you know what you want and ask for it, you're not allowing your partner to do anything for you. So, and I've worked with a lot of couples who are in that situation, and I talk to the woman, and let's say I ask her, so let's say we talk about sex, and I ask her, so what would you like to receive? And in response, she says, yes, but it always has to be his way. And I'm like, I just asked you what you want to receive, and you're not even able to say this. Can you not see that it's not all about what he wants? Is that you allow it to be about just the things that he wants? Because you're not connected to yourself. So the main challenge I see for women, and then also relationships, is that for women to really, really, really connect to what it is that you need. Not what you need to do or what needs to be done, but what do you need? And I will say this, for relationships, unless a woman is happy, a relationship will not be happy. So she's the center. She's the starting point. She needs to be having good sex for the couple to have good sex. She needs to be radiant and happy for the couple to be radiant and happy. Like, her happiness moves on to the man, but a man's happiness does not move on to her. So she needs to be the starting point. But it also means that if she is blocking it and not allowing it, then the relationship doesn't stand a chance to be good. So couples need to prioritize a woman's happiness because she is the sun. And like, you know, I don't have a lot of sun now in winter, and people are grumpy and unhappy. So we need the sun to be happy. A woman is the sun, but she needs to also understand that she is important and prioritize herself. And I see women really struggle with that. And then they're angry at the partner because the partner doesn't do something for them. But it's like, well, you have to ask for that. And no, this is not about the dishes or trash. This is actually not what you need. You thinking it's about that shows me how disconnected you are from yourself. So that is the main challenge I see here. And then the second very common dynamic, it's with single men that I work with. And it's not accepting themselves. And so men often feel that I'm not masculine enough because women don't want me. So how do I become more masculine? And because they're so disconnected from themselves, they don't feel themselves. They're not confident in themselves. They think there is a certain like template that they should fit in. So recently I had this incredible client who works in HR. So he's a people's person. And he felt that he wasn't masculine enough because he was very social and very friendly and he cared about people. And I'm like, well, being a people's person doesn't make you not masculine. What makes you not masculine is the fact that you question that. Your sense of masculinity comes from the fact that you know who you are, you know what you're great at, and you know what gives you satisfaction in life. And I think men really struggle these days because they don't receive the guidance and support to connect to their masculine expression. And then it shows in so many different ways, so many ways. So men allow women to walk all over them and like pick up the fights. Like men just become so small simply because they don't feel rooted in their masculinity. So these two dynamics, I would say, is something I see most often when I work with my clients.
Both such important topics. The first part are for women. I think it takes already a level of maturity to hear that message. Coming from a guy's perspective, a level of maturity to go, like the cliche of happy wife, happy life. You know, we almost say it as like a joke and then blow it off. And what you're saying is it's for real. And to be able to take responsibility for that and to be able to own it. And from a male's perspective, I think it takes a lot of maturity. it's a hard message to hear. And I feel like I'm at the point now after years of personal development that I can hear that message. And so anyone listening to this and, you know, as a male and isn't inviting it in and exploring it at least, or feels like it's a bit triggering, I would invite you to go, okay, try it on. Find out what part is triggering, because it is, it's a big message. But I really love how you're putting the responsibility onto the woman as well, or part of that responsibility onto the woman and understanding her own needs. I also see that come up a lot. I think needs is a really personal needs, and being able to take care of our personal needs, both from a female perspective and a male perspective, is super important. Totally makes sense. Second part of that conversation from the male perspective, I wonder, is that then, are you referring to boundaries, or what's beneath that? Like, where is it that would need to start as a male to be able to take care of that? What do we need to become aware of?
So here's how I approach it. And I think 99% of the male clients I work with, we actually do that. So as a society, we have eliminated the archetype of the warrior, and that is your inner fire. So this is the energy that goes and fights. So these were all the ninjas and knights and all the kids risk your life to protect your home, your family, your country. So what happened is that we have seen what happens when the fire is uncontrolled. That's when we kill people, we destroy, we rape. Like, destruction is incredible. So what we did as a society, we decided to eliminate fire. Instead of learning how to manage and control fire and how to channel it, we decided to eliminate it. And just look on a physical level. We don't use candles anymore. We have electrical bulbs. In many places, you're not allowed to have a gas cooker. You're meant to have an electrical cooker. So we don't use fire. You heat your house not with the fire. Again, for example, in Poland, it's not legal anymore. You cannot have a fire inside of your house because of, like, whatever the reason. So you cannot just have a fire in the forest or outside. You need a special permit, etc. Now, the reasons are fine, but the point is there's no physical fire. We don't work with fire anymore. Like, you know, in shamanic traditions, you have women who start the fire and cater to fire. You learn to work with the element. Instead, the Western society eliminated it. And so we see this with men as well. There's no warrior. And any qualities of the warrior are considered bad. Like, oh, you're unsafe. You should be more emotional. You should communicate more. Like, that's what is now expected from a man. And the fire, that's your ego. That's your identity. These are your boundaries. And when I say ego, this is the sense of who I am. So I don't mean it in a negative way. When we have too much of it, it can become arrogance. But I'm talking about this confidence in who you are. Now, fire is also focus, commitment, ability to set goals and achieve them, which means also moving through obstacles. If there is any difficulty, I can move through that. I burn through that. It's the charisma, it's leadership, discipline, delayed gratification. If you look at your, you know, the men around you, probably also your clients, this is where men struggle these days. And that's what women keep saying, like, we're missing that quality. Why? Because the society has eliminated that. So a man who doesn't have that inner fire is always going to be a weak man, and you will never feel confident about who you are, because again, confidence comes from fire. Women have a bit of a different situation because our energy works a bit differently. We need more water. Eliminating water qualities from women is really dangerous. So we don't pay the same price for lack of fire. But again, the fact that women, like, cannot speak up, that women stay in abusive relationships, it is also lack of fire. So for me, that is the main thing we need to do. As a man, you need to connect your inner animal. You need to connect to the part of you that wants to kill things. That's one of the things why I say, man, you should be eating meat. That's like the minimum you can do for your inner fire. Try going hunting. Like, go do martial arts or some intense sports. Like, when I work with men and I ask them, do you train? And like, yes, I do. Tell me about your training. And then they say, well, like, I do air squats and some bicycle. No, 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 no. put some weight on that. That is training that actually increases your fire, not cardio. So there's a lot of lifestyle activities that men can do that increases the fire. But the most important thing is make your life less comfortable, because comfort kills the fire. Put some challenges in your life, physical, emotional, mental, like literally challenge yourself, and then your fire will increase and you'll see that you will feel more confident in who you are. And that later translates into everything else in your life. But you have to start by reawakening that energy in your body. Like there's no other way. You have to have that.
Yeah. A lot of what you're sharing around masculinity and awakening that fire, or reconnecting with that fire, I think it goes against what a lot of the mainstream messaging we're hearing these days is, especially all the bullshit around toxic masculinity. I don't even want to get into it because I think it's just so, it's such bullshit out there. Oh, man. But like, it's refreshing to hear you say things like, I think that would upset so many people. Go and eat more meat, you know, with this narrative. Go and do some real exercise. Go and be a fucking man. It's such an important message. It's refreshing. And this is what I mean by like you speaking the truth. And it doesn't, I know what you mean is it's not just that. There's lots of other versions of that, but it's that kind of energy towards it. And I think that's really important to hear. What is one of the big like objections, or not objections, maybe obstacles or barriers that you're seeing from people that either consciously or subconsciously need and want to jump into this work? What's one of the big barriers or obstacles that you're seeing come up that's stopping people, both males and females, to really get going on this work?
You know what? I remember years and years ago when I was still living in Milan. So I was this, you know, the business girl. And we had this workshop. It's way before I even knew what personal development was. So this lady comes in and she asked us to lie down. This kind of, you know, for those who do yoga, this is the Shavasana, right? So corpse pose, when you just kind of lie down, floppy. And she just asked us to stay like this for 15 minutes. And I was so uncomfortable. And I remember thinking after that, it's like, yeah, I feel, I prefer when my muscles are tense. Like I like sitting in positions when maybe one leg is over the other so I can like squeeze my muscles. I like that feeling of tension, right? And this is really the answer to your question. Relaxed body feels so uncomfortable to people. They're unable to stay in a relaxed position. So there was another workshop I was given recently, and I asked them to lie down anywhere they wanted in the room, on a sofa or on a beanbag. And I was like, imagine you're a towel that's thrown over a chair or something. Just make sure you're as relaxed as you can, as comfortable as you can. And I played a song and I asked them to keep their eyes closed and just be there. The song was 7 minutes. Half of the people kept opening their eyes, kept scratching, and kept moving. Now, here's the thing. Yes, it will be uncomfortable. But now is the decision. Are you able to recognize that the fact that you cannot just stay relaxed for 7 minutes and that you find it uncomfortable to relax? Are you able to recognize that, oh, wait, this is not normal? And then keep working through that? Or are you going to say, yeah, no, that's not comfortable, so I'm not going to do it? That is the first point. Because I can change your intimate life always as long as you're open to be relaxed in that state. But if you're resisting allowing yourself to relax for a few minutes, if you're not able to do that, then I cannot do anything. Then no one can do anything. Because intimacy lives in a state of relaxation. It's not to say that you always have to be relaxed. Like, remember my friend asked me years ago. So he's like, Magda, what does it mean to be present, like, you know, in the present moment? And I'm telling him what it means. And he's like, so are you always like that? I'm like, no, when I drive a car, of course I'm not. I have to be really focused on the future, predicting if anyone is going to, you know, drive around in front of me. So no, you're not meant to be in the state all the time. Because I think people are worried that, oh, what about my work and other parts of my life? It's not that you have to be in this state of relaxation all the time. But you need to be able to come home, and when you can and when you want to relax. It's a bit like I'm right-handed, but I can choose to use my left hand. So that's what we need. You can be tense and stressed as much as you want, but then you need the ability to relax when you want to have sex with your partner, when you want to have some quality time. And most people cannot switch. They cannot switch. So they lost the ability to move between these two states. So yes, it's going to be difficult. Yes, you're going to want to resist it. And so the question is, are you going to resist it and just be like, nope, that's not for me? Or are you open to go through the discomfort until you find pleasure in relaxation? That is what's needed. If someone is not willing to do that, if someone is not willing to learn to relax, nothing will change in your intimate life.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Or today or tomorrow.
Well, I could tell you also, like, work with me, like sign up for a session with me, but let's be
absolutely
practical.
Totally recommendable. we'll talk about that in a moment. Yeah.
But if you really want to start, honestly, like switch the focus from outwards inwards. And it's simple. In the morning or in the evening, either like after you wake up, just sit, or when you're still in bed and you're just like not ready to get up yet, but you're awake and you still have your eyes closed. Or when you go to bed and you lie down, your eyes are closed, but you're still awake. In those moments, it's the best to do, because like you're not doing anything anyways. Like you're trying to fall asleep or you're trying to slowly wake up. So these are the best times to do it. And just ask yourself a question. What do I need right now? How am I feeling? Just actually talk to yourself the way you would to someone else. Like I always tell my clients, please be schizophrenic. Like actually talk to yourself. Yes, talk to yourself. And that's how it starts. So at first you may not hear anything, but if you keep asking this question, your body will start communicating. And that's when you start building a relationship with yourself. Because all the answers are inside of you. Coaches help you get it because it's a skill. Like you said before, right? It takes, sometimes it really does take an external person to help you. But what we really help you with is to get the message from within. Because that answer is inside of you. I'm here to show you how to get the message, not to tell you what it is, because I get my messages. So it starts with this. Morning or evening, just ask yourself, hey, okay, how am I feeling? Close your eyes. How am I feeling? What do I need right now? Is there anything I need? That's it. Start here.
I think that's it's a really great point around meditation. So many people talk about meditation. I've heard it my whole life, and I'm only just starting to tap into it now and see the benefits and the power of it, because it creates that space to ask those questions and really hear the inner wisdom or the voice or whatever it is that comes out when you allow and create the space for it. And it's incredible. It doesn't come the first time. For me, it took quite a few times to practice, and I'm still really practicing it. But it's incredible the wisdom that does come out. And you're absolutely right. When it comes to coaching, it's not about giving someone the answers or telling them what to do, but helping them connect with their own inner wisdom. That's right. Specifically for them. Fantastic first step. You mentioned to work with you. I think that's awesome. Totally recommendable. Knowing you personally and after having this conversation, if there are people here listening and want to get in touch with you, what's the best way to get in touch, follow, hear more from you, work with you? Where would you best direct them?
So you can just search for Magda K. It's K-A-Y. And you're going to find me on YouTube. This is my main channel. You're going to find me on Instagram. You're also going to find my website where you can read all details about various services. I do have a lot of online courses. We have the School of Intimacy, which is a membership platform for those who really want to go deep and learn a lot of useful skills for relationships. And yes, I also do offer one-on-one coaching, which I think if you're dealing with something deeper and you feel like you're stuck, I honestly think this is a great way of moving through things, because having someone who can see things from the perspective that you may not be able to see, it can be life-changing. So both, you know, you like me, we're both coaches and we've worked with a lot of coaches ourselves. So there is magic in having someone just take you by your hand and walk you through these challenging times and help you come out better. So you can also find details on the website. You can apply for a free consultation through my website, or just honestly, just use any of the channels and message me. Tell me that you were watching this episode, that our, you know, you watched this conversation, so I know where you're coming from. And then we can jump on the call and speak more to see what's happening in your life.
Beautiful. I couldn't agree more with everything that you've shared. Thank you so much. Thank you for your generosity and your time and your wisdom, everything that you've shared here, and also offering that free consultation or session to really help our audience. I think that's amazing. Super appreciative, so much gratitude for everything that you've shared. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. I can't wait to be able to catch up again soon. And until then,
thank you so much.